This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Buck, and Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park here in Racine. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter at the very end of the show around 11:51. We will wrap it up as we do every day now with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it is the Creepy Crawly edition. Think Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, creepy crawly kinds of things. I know. Blah. That's coming up at 11:51. Right now, there, we're going to do some recombobulating with Dan Schaefer, the author of the Recombobulation Area and also Civic Media's political editor. Nice to have you in studio with us, Mr. Schaefer.
In studio today. How's that? Matinair on Air in studio. Very excited to recombobulate with you all in studio today.
Well, let's start with Ben Wickler.
Sure.
Head of the Wisconsin Democrats.
We know Ben Wickler around here, don't mm-hmm. we?
He's done a remarkable job. He really has.
Yeah.
And I would think a lot of people are crediting him with the success that Wisconsin Democrats saw in this election cycle.
Mm-hmm.
At least for the statewide races.
The best of any swing state, reelecting Tammy Baldwin, many victories up and down the ballot, including the guest who was on just before me, Jamie Wall from Green Bay.
It was great.
I think, you know, people have a lot of positive things to say about Ben Wickler's tenure as state party chair, which began in 2014. And now he is being mentioned as a potential candidate to be the chair of the National Party, to be chair of the DNC. So I dug into that a little bit earlier this week to kind of try to figure out a little bit more what's going on, recombobulate, I guess, on what's going on there. A source close to Wickler told me that he is seriously considering running for the role. It is going to be a race. There are going to be a number of candidates who will be running for this. The vote is on February 13th of 2025. So there's a little bit of time. A lot can happen between now and then, especially, as Trump is inaugurated and so many different things happen. But I do think there is, a lot of interest about Wickler potentially taking the plunge here and running for a national position with this. And a number of, people in kind of Wisconsin Democratic circles I talked to were saying that, it would be a bummer for him to leave Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. It would.
Considering the track record of success that he has built here. But to bring that type of experience, to bring that type of success to a national scale, I think would be pretty interesting too. And we can talk about a couple of the candidates who've thrown their hat into the ring already. But the way one Wisconsin Democratic source characterized Wickler, called him a Goldilocks candidate. So saying, he's just right, Jane.
He fits all the things.
Yeah. So they described him as somebody liked by both centrists and progressives, able to connect with big dollar donors and build a grassroots fundraising network, work with key outside groups and help build state parties around the country. Because I think a lot of the pushback that we're going to have to see in the Trump 2.0 era is at the state and local level.
Absolutely.
Especially with Republicans controlling Congress as well. So I think that is, and he knows how to build a state party. He knows how to, really transform things as he does in Wisconsin. So could that make him, just right for the role? Could that make him that Goldilocks candidate? I think just the overall sentiment is just, it would be a bummer for him to leave Wisconsin. But at the same time, I think, there's a tremendous opportunity. And I think the party really needs to be rebuilt, right? I think the Democratic Party needs to be rebuilt in a lot of ways. But I also think it's like, I wonder what people want out of this role at this moment, right? Because I think, do you want somebody who's out there being a really vocal pushback against everything Trump does. You want that firebrand type of voice leading the party, leading the, you know, I don't want to call it the resistance.
Right.
Because that doesn't seem to fit maybe the way it may have 8 years ago. But do you want that type of leader, or do you want somebody who's going to rebuild the party? And I think it is, to a certain extent, it's got to be both, right? It's got to be both. You got to have somebody who's out there pushing back and at the same time, you know, building up the grassroots, reconnecting with some of the voters that may have drifted towards Trump, towards Republicans in the last few election cycles. And so is Wickler that Goldilocks candidate that can do, you know, all of those things, both of those things, whatever, however you want to characterize it? I think that would be really interesting to see.
So who will some of his challengers be for this spot? Who are some of the other folks that names that are getting kicked around for this?
Yeah. So the names who there've been a couple people who have already announced that they are indeed running. Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland, is running. For him, it just seems like, you know, they're bringing back a character from the first season late on in the show, and nobody's really sure why. Of course, he was one of the three candidates in 2016 to run for president, along with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. He was just kind of the third guy that nobody was really paying a whole lot of attention to.
He was like the Doug Burgum of that race.
Kind of the Doug Burgum of that race. And also, for those of our listeners who might be fans of the HBO show The Wire, one of my favorite shows. He is based on Tommy Carchetti, the character in The Wire. Oh, okay. I don't know if you knew that at all.
I tried The Wire. It just...
Different discussion.
We can talk about that after. We can talk about that after. But also, okay, so Martin O'Malley is one of them. And then Ken Martin has probably been the name that has been more interesting, that officially announced that he is running this week. He's the head of the Democratic Party in Minnesota. So they've obviously also done well there. You know, so he in the Minnesota's Democratic Farmer Labor Party, you know, they've won, you know, Tim Walz was elected. They won some really significant legislative majorities. They were able to like do a whole lot. And then Martin is also already a part of the DNC. So he would be kind of just like climbing up the ranks within the organization there, too. Some of the others reportedly considering a run include Michigan State Senator Mallory McMorrow.
She's terrific.
She is, you know, kind of become a rising star in Democratic politics. She had that moment that went viral a couple of years ago. She spoke at the DNC this year. She was the one holding up the whole Project 2025. Yeah. If you remember that moment. Political strategist Chuck Rocha, who worked for Senator Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign, also worked for Ruben Gallego in Arizona for his campaign. That's an interesting name there. The other one that, you know, what it was reported was former Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
No.
And get out.
No.
Get out.
No.
No. Nowhere near. Don't even let him in the door.
Go find something else to do.
That's like Martin O'Malley in that sense of like, well, we have the tried and true stable back here. You know, just why don't we go with what we know? No, this is not what they need. I think you're all of these individuals you're talking about. I think what I think Ben Wickler brings to the table is one, with the exception of Mallory McMorrow, who has not decided to run yet either. And he hasn't, right. Ben hasn't, he's the youngest one next to her.
Yeah.
He's 43 years old. If there's something we learned from this last election, especially with the DNC, the event was the energy, that young person, Democratic energy that was brought to the table, that I think Ben Wickler brings, because if you ever talk to him in your life, I didn't know he was 43. If you asked me right now, I'd think he's like 32 years old. He's got a lot of energy. He's very, very positive. And I think what he's built in Wisconsin, especially from the fundraising aspect, speaks a lot to him. So I think he has a few things going for him that I think they're very, very important. And when you look at the list of people who have, you look at the list of people who've served as chair, it's, no offense to any of them, except for maybe W. Wasserman Schultz, who was not great.
No.
They look like stuffy politicians. They're all stalwarts in the Democratic Party. He's becoming one, but he's got that energy and zhuzh, if you will. And also—
He's got the riz.
He'd be the first— There it is. Whoa. He'd be the first person—
Gen Z Jane over here.
There we go.
It's me.
He'd be the first one to serve from the Midwest since the late 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s. And I think all politics are battering down our doors in the election time to tell us how great we are by coming to our state 38 times and spending $150 million to come here. I think maybe get the voice of the swing state that you love the most right now, at least, get that represented here. I think that makes a good case for Ben Wickler.
I think so too. And I also think, you know, the fact that he was a state party chair and not a politician.
Yes.
And I think that is interesting too. I talked to a Republican source for this story too. And they said that, you know, some of the more successful RNC chairs were state party chairs before that. So like Reince Priebus being a state party chair before he became the RNC chair, and then they won. Michael Whatley, who is currently the RNC chair, was the North Carolina party chair before he. So I think it is interesting to come from that space as opposed to somebody who is, you know, an elected official or has that more public facing type of job, type of persona. So you want somebody who's going to be able to be, you know, like Ben Wickler can come on the radio. He can do a TV spot. He's successful in those realms too.
Yes.
But I think the more important aspect to me is really building the infrastructure around the party as much as just being the type of, like, you know, figurehead, like a, you know. I love your guys' reaction to Rahm Emanuel and that name being there. Because honestly, when I was calling sources for this story, that was what most of the same reaction was among those sources.
No.
A hard no. Yeah.
He was fun for like a month after the election. And then we're like, this guy. And then he's like, I'm going to run for mayor of Chicago. I'm like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, and the other name that has come up in the last couple of weeks, I saw something about Anthony Weiner. A couple of weeks ago, it's like, no, maybe a third party. That's a bad idea.
Join the Green Party, buddy. Lead them.
If you're just joining us, Dan Schaefer is our guest, of course, the author of the award-winning Recombobulation Area, and he is also Civic Media's political editor. Before we go to break, Dan, quickly, if Ben Wickler would ascend to the head of the DNC, who's gonna slip in and take his place? We'll kick that around.
There are a lot of domino effects.
All right, we'll kick that around when we come back. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, Sweet Gal B, coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Jabba the Musk continues to actively ruin. We are joined in studio by Dan Schaefer, of course, the author of the award-winning Recombobulation Area and also Civic Media's political editor, talking about Ben Wickler, head of the Wisconsin Committee, Wisconsin Democrats in Wisconsin.
That's right.
Well said.
In the state in which we live.
The chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin.
That thing.
Yeah.
It's
Friday. We're discombobulated. That's why I'm here, Jane.
To help bring us back. Okay.
Yeah.
Now he's, you know, looking to throw his hat in the ring for the head of the DNC.
Mm-hmm.
If he would leave, who would take his place here in Wisconsin?
Yeah. So I think there are, this is another important part of the conversation, because there are a few interesting kind of ripple effects with this. So let's go through the timeline first. So the vote for this DNC chair role is February 13th.
Okay.
The Wisconsin spring election is April 1st.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's, yes,
coming,
I know.
It's going to be here really quick.
It's going to be here really quick. Yes. We saw the Democratic Party of Wisconsin endorse Judge Susan Crawford this week.
Yes.
So, you know, that is another very much everything on the line race that we have in Wisconsin, as if we're not, you know, all absolutely gassed from the last few months and all of the campaign things that have happened in Wisconsin there. So, and from what I hear, that Wickler really wants to see that through. Really wants to see that election mm-hmm. through,
yeah.
As far as, you know, because of keeping that liberal majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, tremendously important.
It is. Yeah. It's so important. And I hope folks realize that if we don't keep a Democratic majority in the Wisconsin Supreme Court, we could go back to the gerrymander.
There's a lot that we could go backwards on.
Yes.
And I think that was such a hard fought victory that took, you know, all, like flipping a number of seats on the Wisconsin Supreme Court year after year after year.
Yes.
And if that were to be only a short lived experience that was only like 2 years, that would be a real problem. Mm. So I know that's very important to him. And then in June, that's when Wickler's term as party chair ends. And so I don't know that he would necessarily run for another term anyway, because, you know, yeah. it's been, what, 5 years now or something like that since he's been party chair. I believe that's how long, I don't know exactly how long the terms for this are, but his term would end in June anyway. So we have this February vote, you have the April election, you have the June expiration of the term there. So all of those factors at play as well. Another thing that a number of the sources that I talked to this week told me was that Wickler does have some interest in at some point running for statewide office. Now, whether that's governor in 2026,
interesting.
Whether that's senator in 2028, that remains to be seen. You know, we just got out of the election.
Yeah,
there's way too much speculation happening. But I do also think that there are a lot of political futures, a lot of, you know, decisions from Democratic leaders across Wisconsin hinging on what Governor Tony Evers is going to do for 2026. Now, is he going to run for another term? We don't know yet. Again, we're just coming out of the 2024 election. He's not going to come right around and say, like, hey, I'm running for re-election. Hey, I'm not doing anything. He's probably more focused on, okay, what's next year going to look like with the budget? What are all these different conversations that we're going to have? We have a different makeup in the legislature. What am I going to have to do to counter some of what Trump might be doing at the federal level and just, like, you know, the changes that will happen there? There's a lot to consider that are probably first, you know, top of mind before getting to what his political future is. But at the same time, you know, Tony Evers will be 75 in November of 2026. You know, I don't think when he ran for re-election a couple of years ago, I don't think there was a great expectation that he would seek a third term. Now, you know, he is in a more he is, you know, based on the Marquette polling, he is the most popular politician in the state of Wisconsin right now. And so would you want to, you know, have a big primary or something like that, or you know, have another situation where Evers would run for re-election? That's a question that I think Democrats will have to ask in the months to come here, because I think that's a big part of it. And then if he chooses not to run for a third term, would Wickler be at the top of that list? There are a lot of names that would jump into the ring there.
Sure.
You know, I reported last year that Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley is interested in running for governor in 2026. Attorney General Josh Call has discussed this possibility. Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson has. You've got Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, mm-hmm. Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, State Senator Kelda Royce, who ran a few years ago. Like, there's a lot of names for you know, Democrats have a pretty solid bench compared to where they were a number of years ago. So I, you know, that could be a big weird primary. And you don't know if Wickler would necessarily emerge in a field that big either. So
West from Middleton texted in, listening on WRCE. Ben is the man. His turnaround of the state party has been remarkable. Wisconsin Dems let Walker destroy them. Then they took an 8-year hiatus, didn't even bother trying until Ben came back to town. I wish he would stick around through 2026. We're not done with our work here. We need to make a serious effort to get a Democratic trifecta, even if only for a few years, to finally prepare the Walker-Voss regime that we are still living under.
And that's
one
good point.
And that's one thing I thought about with regard to Ben Wickler, is that he's universally loved in the state for the party. And I feel like if he's going to step down, he may have a person or two in mind who he thinks are the right calls to replace.
Follow him.
And his endorsement of those individuals,
a successor of
would go far in the voting process, and someone he trusts to keep that legacy going.
Yeah, I think that's going to be an important part of that too, because I think we'll see that, you know, kind of come to a head regardless of how these decisions are made over the past next couple months. Like, come this summer, we're going to have to figure out who the party chair for the Democrats is going to be going forward. I have to imagine Wickler has a pretty good idea of what he wants to do next, too. So
news is coming up next. We will keep recombobulating with Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area. It's an extra dose of recombobulation.
That's right.
Stick around. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, and the Board Lord coming to you from our studio at Radio Park here in Racine. Join us. You can call, you can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that used to be Twitter. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we will wrap up the show with This Shouldn't Be a Thing, Creepy Crawly edition. Think Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom kind of creepy crawly. That'll steer you in the right direction.
Whenever I think, I just think of eating monkey brains. That's what I think of, too.
That can be what part of it, too. Dan Schaefer is here from the award-winning Recombobulation area, and he is also Civic Media's political editor. And we're going to lighten things up just a little bit for our last segment with you, Dan. You got to see someone that I love and adore. I would be like stalker scary if I ever got to meet Jon Stewart.
Yeah, that's right. I got to see Jon Stewart at the Riverside Theater last night.
I didn't even know he was coming to town.
I mean, I think it was one of those things. A lot of people who I was talking to at the show was just like, oh, this must have to do with the fact that they didn't have the Daily Show at the RNC.
Yeah. Oh, that's what it was.
I have to imagine there's some connection there. They talked about maybe coming back for whatever. But yeah, this was a birthday gift from my wife. So shout out to Katie.
Well done.
What a good man.
What a woman.
Wait, yeah, that's right.
Gift from her to you?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
Amazing.
So that was my birthday gift, was going to see one of my absolute all-time favorites in Jon Stewart. So it was a real treat to be able to see him in person, see him be able to do a stand-up set. Or you're so used to seeing him behind the desk, scribbling on the paper, chuckling to himself, doing all of the Jon Stewart things.
All the voices.
All the voices, And of course, there was a lot of that. But seeing, a full Jon Stewart stand-up set was very cool. And a good reminder that I think political comedy is just so needed in this day and age.
Yeah,
we've got to be able to laugh at what's going on.
You
got to
find some laughs, otherwise, we're all going to cry all the time, and you can't do that.
Exactly, and I think as the left and whatever left of center media or just the people on the on this side of the aisle more broadly. I think going forward in the Trump era, I think comedy is going to be a really important part of things and not being so self-serious about all of it. And I think that's what Stewart returning to The Daily Show has been so refreshing mm-hmm. in a lot of days, because I think some of the comedy that's come out of the Trump era has just been so pearl clutching and whatever. And Stewart will come in and he just makes fun of everybody. And like, yeah. I know he's got a certain perspective. He comes from a certain side of things, but he really does try to skewer everybody in a sense there. And really, you know, just laugh at the liberals as much as he's, you know, ripping the conservatives and right wingers too. So,
yeah, I think that good political comedy is coming from the point of like trying to give voice to the voiceless and trying to point fingers at hypocrisy and big power, big money, those types of things. What was I was going to, I had a point to something and then it's totally escaped my brain. But yeah, I mean, he is, oh yeah, he just signed a contract to do another year of The Daily Show on Monday.
On
so
Mondays.
he'll still be around doing it. And I think as long as the FCC allows, they should keep, yeah, comedians need to keep doing that. Now, I will say this to you non-comedians out there. Do not say to a comedian, well, you're going to get a lot of material, because people have said to
yeah.
us,
oh, yeah.
you're going to get a lot of material from Trump, aren't you? Gladly not have this to, you know, I'll give up, yeah. As Patton Oswalt said, I'll give up the 10 minutes of jokes I wrote on George W. Bush. But while they're here and there's nothing we can do about it, it's time to write that good material that represents a voice that says, you are, in fact, ridiculous. You are the great and powerful Oz, who's nothing but a huckster trying to take us for all of our money while making you laugh really hard at it.
But I think, too, to your point, Dan, I think it's important for comics to be able to laugh at both sides mm-hmm. and point out the pomposity of both sides. Mm-hmm. Corey Ryan Forrester, who's been on our show, frequently talks about liberals are annoying
yeah.
and that because we are. and so, you know, to acknowledge that and embrace that, I just think that that's a better idea than making it all that the other side is the only area in which laughs are given.
Yeah. And one of the things he said, I don't want to like talk about the set exactly.
Do all of all his that. Jokes
yeah, I'll
right
do,
now.
I'll do the full hour long set that, you know, from memory. No, but, you know, he talked about his first show back when he was doing the Monday shows and mm-hmm. stuff like that, where he went talked about Biden's age.
Yeah.
And he talked about the reaction to that and the people going, oh, how could you say that? You know, he's
yeah.
But I think it's just like, yeah, say, it was important for him to say that. It was important for a lot of people to actually come forward and start saying that at that time. So I think that was, you know, one of the things that stood out to me with that. But I also was just kind of thinking about, you know, obviously, Greg, you're an actual comedian who has done these kinds of things. But like the state of comedy in the last few years has just been this like, oh, are you offended type of, yeah. oh, yeah, we're going to trigger you now. Oh, look at these woke libs, you know,
well,
or cancel culture. Forget you guys. I'm going to say what's really on my mind. And it's just like yeah. it you know, it's almost positioned the comedy world as like, you know, you're rebelling against the Biden administration or rebelling against the liberals, but somehow taking the side of like the richest people in the universe.
The richest people who like align with Nazis.
Right. Exactly. And so that's your rebellion, I guess. That's your speaking truth to power, talking about how awesome the richest guy in the world is, who's trying to like take away all of these different rights and whatever. Yeah. So I think going forward, you know, there's been this conversation like, oh, the left needs its own Joe Rogan
wrong.
Or something like that, which I think is the wrong way to frame things. But I think it is, I think you have to be able to laugh at yourselves. And I think there has been points on the left where Democrats have been
Absolutely.
A little bit too self-serious
Absolutely.
And not self-deprecating enough, because we should be making fun of ourselves because we are sometimes ridiculous.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
I think, absolutely. I think, I don't know. I'll say it right now. I think liberals can be funnier than conservative people. And what I mean by that is like, if you are a conservative and you are a stand-up comic, there's absolutely no reason why you can't be absolutely hilarious. Mm-hmm. The problem with conservative comedy and that anti-woke, I want to trigger you, the woke mafia, woke mother, all that crap, they don't care about the joke. I care about a joke. I care about the craft. I care about the writing. I care about the I care about like the, you know, the play on words. I care about all that from start to finish. And I think anybody, regardless of who they vote for, is capable of that if they work at it. What I don't like is what they do, which is it's all about reaction. They don't care about the joke. If I tell a joke about women to Jane, and what I'm doing is I make a really, you know, misogynistic joke towards Jane, I say that I want Dan's laughter too. And then that laughter makes me feel good. And I want your outrage. And that makes me feel good. I don't care that I actually made someone laugh. I care about that's why like all social media is based mainly on negative interaction. Now that's how you say some of the worst things. And most of those people online, those influencers, they don't believe in this stuff. They don't care about those things. They just know they're going to get 2,000 comments saying you are the devil, and that's what allows them to create partnerships with raw milk companies and say make, you know, $500K a year on one deal. So I think that
all comedy, the supplements that they're also selling with these
They all work 100%. Just ask Dr. Oz.
And you brought that up, the left needs a Joe Rogan. I think that's horse pucky. For the longest time, for years, the right needs a Jon Stewart. They're never going to get it. Because,
isn't that Greg Gutfeld now?
No, he's not even funny. He just happens to be on late night. Don't insult my art.
I'm just throwing it out there.
You triggered me, Jane.
Touchy.
But the problem with that kind
of... Jane needs her own special now. Jane Unfiltered. Triggering woke Greg.
I'm so woke. The thing is that the problem with the notion of a conservative Jon Stewart is just what you said. Jon Stewart can poke fun at everybody and take the poking. He can make fun of the things he believes in when he sees the problems therein, and he can accept the jokes and he can laugh at them. The Republicans do not do that. They have no penchant for sarcasm, irony, wit, or any sort of like self-effacement. It's their way or the highway. If you don't like it, you're the woke, and we're going to make fun of you for what you love. And the notion of having a liberal Joe Rogan is so funny to me, because the idea of Joe Rogan is just a thumb with a mouth. And he takes in information how he sees fit and says nothing. And he has on some of the worst people on earth to talk about terrible things and does nothing to challenge them.
Yeah.
He's just kind of riffing.
Exactly. Right? I think people do enjoy that. Like, it's a very popular podcast.
They do.
But I think that the part of it that I think is something that is worth paying attention to is having a podcast or some sort of comedic element to delivering the news. And I think that was, you know, as you know, my millennial liberal mind growing up in the Obama years with Jon Stewart on TV every night, that was how I processed the news in so many ways. But I think at the same time, it's just like, that's what we have to look at a little bit more going forward. And it has to, you know, the different media ecosystems of this and all of that has to be, it can't be so self-serious, and there has to be some comedy. There has to be a different access point for people to get to the news. And I think that's what worked about The Daily Show and Colbert, especially, you know, in that day and age. And I think that is partially what works. About the Joe Rogan of it all is just that people aren't necessarily, I'm really into politics, I'm going to listen to Joe Rogan. It's somebody who might be into UFC or comedy or all sorts of different things. Mm-hmm. But I think you have to give people who might not otherwise be part of the political process a path in.
That
right?
makes sense.
And I think that is the thing that is actually... we should be paying attention to as far as like, should there be a Joe Rogan of the left? There needs to be more access to the political conversation from places that are not explicitly political, right?
I agree with that. I think it's like my whole thing with because when people say the liberals need a Joe Rogan, to me, Joe Rogan's a guy who allows people to come onto a show and say whatever they want are rarely fact checked.
Yeah.
And shows like, you know, well, John Oliver doesn't have guests anymore, but like, you know, Jon Stewart, they're constantly, they employ some of the best fact checkers in the business.
Yes.
They want to make sure that the information they have is stellar. And if you went on a Jon Stewart podcast that was like Joe Rogan and you said something, he constantly be checking you saying, no, you are wrong. Well, I mean, like his interviews on his Apple show, he constantly checking you when you're wrong. And I think the thing that people really do love about Joe Rogan isn't so much about the information they're getting. It's the bias they're being, that their biases that are being reinforced through the people he has on his show. So like, you like Elon Musk and Twitter, and you want to go back to the day when you could slap a woman's bottom and they should take a compliment. He's going to have those guys on and you can feel good about yourself. And he makes $100 million plus on it. So I don't think we need a Joe Rogan. I think what you said is perfect. We need access points.
Yeah. And I think Democrats and people on the left have to stop being so precious about where they're having their conversations too.
Yeah.
Because I think it's just like, oh, we have to do only this interview on CNN and this one on The View and like this and whatever. Just go everywhere and have a conversation. Yeah. Like Donald Trump just won re-election by saying whatever was on his mind for like a million different bro podcasts. And there's research that has come out already showing that that moved people and that like younger men especially are gravitating to Republicans because they're hearing I don't want to say authentic conversation because that would imply somebody's telling the truth, but maybe a genuine one, I guess. Right.
Yeah. They're speaking their mind. They're not filtering this stuff. He's just saying what they want. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a whole nother discussion about young men, where young men are getting their information and what they're doing with the media diet.
Well, that was one thing too. Like when I was doing my reporting in that Fox Valley story, I talked to a couple of the editors of the Advanced Titan there, both women, and they were saying like just about every young man on campus is listening to Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. He's incredibly popular.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to counter that. I don't think that's very healthy, but that's Jane, just
you're
me.
No.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Jane Matt Nair is the Joe Rogan of the left.
Oh,
is
that? Yes. Just, yeah, come on and I'll just reinforce your biases. Sounds good to me. Thank you so much, Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area. Make sure you subscribe. It's fantastic. When we return, This Shouldn't Be a Thing, Creepy Crawly Edition. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call. You can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that used to be Twitter. Coming up next week, Dr. Kristen Lyerly will be here on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
At 11:06, there are some recent developments as far as abortion and abortion care go in this country. One particular thing going on in Georgia that I think is really worth talking about. Also on the way next week, Luke Mathers will be here on Tuesday.
Ooh.
Hans Breitenhauser.
Breitenmoser.
Breitenmoser is on Pat of Kreitlow's show very frequently.
Monthly, yep. He was a monthly guest.
He's wonderful.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about tariffs and Wisconsin farmers and the farm bill.
An article that was actually written with him as they spoke to him about it in the Journal Sentinel. We'll talk about that. I'm looking for Hans is great.
He is. He's wonderful. And then Maggie Dawn will be here next Wednesday. Also, Milwaukee Record. We're going to lighten things up a little bit. Second hour of Wednesday. Because it's the day before Thanksgiving.
Well, Jane, what's on the show for Thanksgiving and Black Friday? Like, what are we doing those shows?
Well, on Thanksgiving Day, we have a specially curated show.
Folks, you know it's good when you say curated.
It makes it all that more special. Specially
fancy.
Curated show, and then we have guest host filling in for us, Matt Rothschild.
Correct.
We'll be here next Friday and next Monday. So that is all on the way right now, though. 11:53. Galvin, that means it is time for...
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
If you ever have a thing that should not be, send it into Greg and E. Jane Says at civicmedia.us, J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S. Jane Says at civicmedia.us, this from WISN Channel 12. Headline reads, smuggler arrested with 300 tarantulas strapped to his body. Police in Peru arresting a man who was trying to leave the country with 320 tarantulas, 110 centipedes, and 9 bullet ants strapped to his body. The 28-year-old South Korean national was stopped at the airport in Lima, Peru earlier this month after officials noticed his stomach area looked bulky. A search.
Rookie got that job?
A search revealed hundreds of insects packaged inside Ziploc bags strapped to his abdomen. Police detained the man who was traveling to South Korea via France. Peru's environmental crimes prosecutor has opened an investigation. They believe he took the insects. He must have been collecting them from some part of the Peruvian Amazon. The tarantulas and the centipedes and the bullet ants, I don't even know what those are now in the care of authorities in Peru. I didn't know this. Tarantulas are a threatened species. They were all illegally extracted. They're part of illegal wildlife trafficking worth millions of dollars globally. Ugh. Peru is not the only South American nation facing problems with wildlife trafficking. In December of 2021, authorities in Colombia seized over 200 tarantulas, 67 cockroaches, 9 spider eggs, and a scorpion hidden at a suitcase in Bogota.
And a partridge in a pear tree. Boom, boom.
Are we buying these as pets?
I'll bet you. Okay, Jane, there are 8 billion people on this earth.
Yes.
Do you think a small collection of those individuals don't have
insects?
Weird insect collections?
Well, I know people have snakes and iguanas and lizards, and I know that there are people who are spider fans, but really, this is my pet centipede, Walter? Really?
Jane, I respect your choices, and if you want to have a pet centipede named Walter, I'm fine with that. I respect your decisions. I respect your journey, is what more importantly. But if you tell me that I got to strap 300 tarantulas, which, by the way, I'm not even afraid of tarantulas. They're kind of cute because they're big spiders. Little spiders freak me out. I'm not going to kill them, but still, 300 tarantulas strapped them. You better be paying me a lot of money.
Well, I'm assuming he was expecting a big payoff once he got back to his own country, but not anymore.
Nope.
Not anymore. Nice try, though. Trying to leave with 320 tarantulas.
Oh, sorry, my mistake.
110 centipedes. And 9 bullet ants. It's the centipedes.
The centipedes
freak me out.
It's the fact that they run so fast.
Yes.
And they appear out of nowhere. Like, you're watching television, and then there's something pops out of your right eye. You're like...
right up the wall.
What is that? Oh, yeah. No!
Okay. Well, that does it for today's episode of Calvin.
This shouldn't be a thing.
Thank you, Greg and Calvin, and all of our engineers. Without you guys, absolutely nothing works. Thank you most of all for calling and for texting and for listening. It absolutely means the world. I hope you find some joy over the weekend, even if it's just a little bit, and you have the chance to share it. Stay close. News is next, followed by Todd Alba, noon to 2, Maggie Dawn, 2 to 4, Dom Salvia, 4 to 6 p.m., Pete Schwabe tonight from 6 to 8 p.m. Great lineup all day. Keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you on Monday. Yeah.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.